Hello and welcome to the Naptown Blues Fancast, a weekly roundup of your Annapolis Blues FC playing in the Mid-Atlantic Division of the NPSL. I am your host, Sam Houston, and across the way from me, my co-host, barely made it here through the floods and the storms, Hiram Wainwright. How you doing, good sir?
I'm still alive, but I'm doing well.
You're not young and old and all that kind of crazy stuff, too?
No, we talk about that on the other show.
But okay, cool. Yeah. Just like to just keep it and check in on you, that's all.
I'm all good. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your podcast platform of choice. Please take a moment to leave a review and share with your football and friends. You can also follow the show on Twitter at Naptown Blues Pod. And for tickets, go to AnnapolisBlues.com.
We have a tradition, dare I say, an obligation here at the DU Public House to have a drink in our hands while we record. Hiram, what are we enjoying today?
We are enjoying some delightful tequila. It is a Maestro Dobel Añejo tequila. It is a single estate tequila with special edition tequila.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's a single barrel for a, so they'll call it a barrel pick. That's when a store selects a barrel for their own. So it's only theirs. Nobody else has one.
Yeah, it comes in a nice bottle. It's actually a Hungarian and French oak barrel type as well, too. But it actually does look beautiful. It's a nice little color on it, too. I don't know. I haven't tried it yet. Sam, what do you think?
First sip, really sweet. You still get the notes of agave. Agave as a plant's going to give you a little bit of some pepper in it. That's going to be kind of interesting. with this, because you're working with Hungarian and French oak, this is essentially wine barrels from Europe. Mm. So that's why you got this really kind of deep ruby color in it, but also why you get that sweetness as well that comes with it too. Now, there's certain classifications and laws with tequila. What do the words on the bottle mean, right? Mm. Blanco is unaged, right? That's your white, silver, you know, what everybody thinks of when they think of, you know, Casamigos or Patron, right? Yeah. Just standard silver kind of tequila. Then from there, you have reposado. Reposado means rested. This means it's an age statement that is no more than 1 month to 11 months in used American oak or just used oak in general. But typically, used oak will be bourbon barrels, right? Because in America, bourbon and rye, you use your barrel once, that's it. So what do? They use it as a secondary market. They sell it to everybody else in the world, and everybody else in the world uses American wood to age their spirits.
Gotcha.
Now this, which is an añejo, has to be a minimum of 1 to 3 years in a used oak barrel of any type, right?
That's nice of color.
And then the final thing you have would be an extra añejo, which is 3+ years. So when you see like Gran Burdeos from Patron, Don Julio 1942, that kind of stuff, those are extra añejos. And why are they so damn expensive? Because they've been sitting in a barrel for over 3 years.
Yeah.
Also, typically, they use very special barrels. So, like, in the case of Gran Burdeos from Patron, it's Chateau Margaux barrels, which are French Bordeaux barrels. Very hard to come by. Mm. Like, Grand Cru, the top echelon of French wine.
Right.
So, very, very expensive. Also, real damn hot in Mexico, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot more evaporation than in the case of, say, whiskey in America. So you're losing probably 20% more of that barrel to evaporation to the angel share than you are with bourbon. So there you go. What do you think, by the way? You get a taste in there?
Oh, that was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
You know me, the key to my heart is definitely some tequila aside from some good Annapolis Blues soccer.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is definitely some smooth tequila. I can literally take this any day.
Yeah, well, say I'm going to learn you on this, son. I got you. We're gonna drink lots of really good alcohol. And besides, when it comes to tequila, know you're a huge tequila guy. So I figure let's get you out of just the normal Casamigos Patron and let's get you into something a little more fun, right?
This is why I love you.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm here for. What else should we always do?
We always drink responsibly.
Why are we doing a show in the middle of the winter? Well, it's because not every day you get to chat with NPLS East and Mid-Atlantic All 11, Mid-Atlantic top goal scorer, Georgetown University, and now DC United player Jacob Morrell. How the hell are you, good sir?
Good. How are you? Thanks for
fantastic.
Thanks for having
me. Thank you for joining us today,
yeah,
man.
Of course.
It's been a hell of a year for you.
Yeah,
I mean, kind of think of all of it from, you know, Georgetown to the Blues back to Georgetown to getting drafted, like all of this, where's your head? It's got to be spinning right now.
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot, but at the same time, I had good mentors, good coaches, good teammates to lead me through the process. So,
especially through that process, now that you reached the highest level of U.S. soccer, that being MLS with DC United, how would you say your experience within the NPSL and being with the Blues helped further your experience as a professional player in the professional atmosphere, especially with what we had this past season?
Yeah, I mean, I talk about it a lot with Coach Weiss, and he mentions it to the Georgetown guys a lot. The guys who played on good summer teams this past summer, you look at a guy like Zach Zenge playing for Vermont Green up in Burlington. It's a USL2 team. Mm-hmm. You look at myself playing for the Blues. These are really good opportunities and experiences throughout the summer that put us in a good spot for preseason. You look at the two of us, we hit the ground running. We hit the ground really well in preseason and into the first few games for Georgetown. And that helped propel us to the success that we had this year. You know, I haven't stepped into the pro game yet. And what I hear, it's going to be a huge step. It's going to be difficult, and it's going to be the hardest and the most rewarding, but at the same time, strugglesome, I guess, time in my life. But, you know, I think that the Blues helped segue me into that.
My little story for you. My co-host for the other show we do, the DU football show, his younger brother played for the last Bowie High team to win a state title. And he also played for Christos United.
Okay, yep.
And he was on the Christos team that got to play against DC United.
Yep, yep.
And he said, we're out there, we're playing, we're busting our asses. Lorenzo Sam comes on as a sub. He was in front of me. And then he was 20 yards past me. Like, within a moment, he was in front of me. He had the ball. I turned around and he was gone. Gone. So, you know, as much as you prepare yourself and as many different levels that you've played, and you've played your whole damn life, it's still being ready for what the professional world is going to be. This is the top echelon. Like, it's not going to be easy. It's going to definitely be a growing experience.
Right, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that the biggest thing is going to be the mentality. It's going to be ups and downs every single day. It's going to be like, oh, one day I have a good training, one day I have a bad training, just kind of staying on the straight and narrow with my mindset. So
right, and well, I mean, I imagine high school, you started all the time. Blues, you started all the time. You got to earn your damn spot at DC. Like, yeah, it's not just given to you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, It's going to be trying to fight for a starting spot. Obviously, you got Benteke there, who's mm-hmm. a legend of the game, and it's someone that, you know, I'm going to try and learn from, take things from every single day, watch how he shoots a ball, how he holds the ball up, how he connects, how he handles himself in the locker room. It's a guy that I'm really excited to play with and learn under. So
very cool. Now, let's take a second and kind of look at this past season. What would you say were similarities and differences from how Coach Harriet coached at the Annapolis Blues and how Coach Weiss coached at Georgetown in style of play and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, the outcome to both plays is the same. You know, we're both trying to keep the ball. We're trying to play possession-based soccer. The way of getting there is a little bit different. So with the Blues, we played against a lot of teams that would come out and press us. And so towards the end of the year, some teams would sit back a little bit deeper, but a lot of times teams would press us. So when we would break down that pressure, we would have a lot of space to attack into, which was a nice thing for me as an attacker, having space to work with. But with Georgetown, it's a little bit different. We focused, we played against a lot of teams that sat in deeper, so we would naturally have the ball in the other team's half, and it was trying to navigate how do we break a team down with little space and find chances and find goals. I would say with the coaching style, Coach Colin Harriet focuses on a lot of build-up and focuses on movements within the build, whether that's interchanging center mids and outside backs, or he always just seemed to have a solution for whatever a team threw at us pressure-wise. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Georgetown, we focused a bit more on how we pressed the other team and how we could nip goals by winning the ball back, that type of stuff. I mean, obviously, both teams, like with the Blues, we focused on pressure, and with Georgetown, we focused on how to build out. But I would mm-hmm. say that with the Blues, we focused more on how we built, and then with Georgetown, we focused a bit more on how we pressed.
Follow-up to that, then, how do you feel, like you said, the styles, how you got there was different, but the result was the same. How do you feel that each of those helped you and around you as a player then?
Yeah, I mean, I think I got, I think there's definitely stuff I need to work on still with playing against, I guess, a low block. That's something that I'm really intrigued with recently, is how to break down a low block, how to play against a low block. But I mean, it helped make me more well-rounded in the sense that I was always playing against either teams with space, and naturally that's what I'm good at, is when I have space, I can run into space, that type of stuff. Whereas with Georgetown, I needed to learn how to play against a low block and really break down and find chances and shots against those types of teams.
And throughout the season, like, there was infinite moments that happened with the Blues, of course. And from the first match that we had, where I think we came close to we broke the record for the attendance in NPSL, to the conference championship towards the end of the season. Like, what key moments did you enjoy the most throughout the entire NPSL season?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to not say the last Alexandria game, the final. I think that's the clear one, the obvious one. But I would say that the thing that the fans probably don't realize is, like, how much we enjoy as players, like, communicating and interacting with them after the games. It's the most rewarding thing when you play a bad game and there's still all these little kids who, I guess, idolize you. Right. And you kind of forget that when you get caught in your head. You're like, oh, I played terrible. Like, it was really important to, I guess, interact with them and that type of stuff. It was kind of, I have a funny story. One of the kids one time, it makes it lighthearted, but I didn't score at a home game. And one of the kids comes up to me. He's like, oh, can you sign my shirt or whatever?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, of course. And I'm about to start signing. And he's like, did you score today? And I look up at him, I'm like, no, not today. And he's like, takes his shirt back. He's like, oh, no.
So, leading goal scorer in the damn league. Top goal scorer on the team. All freaking conference. Nah, I don't want you here. What good are you for me today, sir? Like, he
didn't score. Gordy, where you at? But, like, it's just bringing back, like, those moments, like you mentioned about those kids and everything. Like, I know when you're on the pitch, you see a bunch of you're obviously, like, paying attention to what's going on and off, not on and off, but, like, mainly, like, what's going on, making sure you're trying to attack and go high, going, like, in a high intensity game. Though I would say, from, like, a fan's perspective, and I'm pretty sure most of our Nattown Blues fans have probably seen this, have you witnessed the kid with the dinosaur suit that walks around the concourse whenever you're on the field?
I've seen him one time, and I think he was he in the Old Bay chant?
Possibly, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I think I saw him maybe in the Old Bay chant one time. I mean, it's like a sea of blue, and so he's kind of standing out in, like, in the dino outfit, but right. Not looking into the stands too much while I'm playing, but
yeah. When, you got something else to kind of focus on. Yeah. Well, not only do you have the kids talking to you, you also have older 50-year-old men who still hang on to their youth going up to you after games and going, I see you with the shithouse around the pitch. I saw what you did today. You didn't score, but I saw what you did. I saw you. Well, we'll talk a little bit about that in just a few more questions. But what, and this is the whole thing, because obviously, you know, there's agents, there's phone calls, there's conversations. It's not like you're like, oh, crap, DC United drafted me. You know, there's some thought process of what's going to happen and where you think you may go. What was your first reaction to hearing that you were drafted by DC United and just kind of that whole process leading up to it?
Yeah, so, I mean, as much as you would think that you would know where you're going before the draft, you have no idea.
Really? Okay. Yeah.
So, like, at the MLS Combine, there was a lot of free time, but in that free time, teams could call you in and interview with you. So I did interviews with some teams, that type of stuff. You never really knew for sure what team was going to take you. Mm-hmm. I thought that there was a chance I could go to Colorado. I thought that there was a chance I could go to NYC. I knew DC was interested. But at the end of the day, my agents were like, look, DC really likes you. A team could take you before. DC could not take you. You could fall lower. It just depends.
Right.
The first time I knew DC was taking me was about a minute before they took me. They texted my agent and let him know that they were going to take me. And then he showed me his phone, right before I got picked. So I kind of knew that I was going to go to DC before I got picked, but it was only like
moments,
a minute before. Yeah.
Right,
it was
moments before.
Yeah. Leading up to the draft and everything, it was in my head. I had absolutely no idea where I was going.
Very cool. Yeah. Very cool. But you were at that time, after having the season you had at Georgetown, you were pretty sure you're like, yeah, I'm probably getting picked.
Yeah. I figured I would get picked at some point. But at the end of the day, there's guys that I know, who were great players, had great seasons and didn't end up getting picked. And then there's guys who I thought might not get picked that got picked. So it's really an unknown. You have to go into it with the mindset of like, oh, what happens if I don't get picked, and have a plan for that if it doesn't happen.
Right.
Obviously I thought that I was going to get picked. I thought I deserved to get picked, but at the same time, it could have not happened. So
Right. Well, then it's just right back to school, right. Back to, you know, play another summer league, just do it again, and hopefully then you're picked in the next year, right?
Right.
So,
speaking of the experience that you had, like, again, back with the Blues, of course, like, you see, like, all the talent that you see happen throughout your time playing, of course, and I think it was, I believe, 13 players from the NPSL that were drafted in the first round of the MLS draft. So would you say, like, not just the Blues, but not just the NPSL, but the Blues being a good launching point to getting to that next level of being, like, either USL or even MLS as well, too?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I haven't experienced MLS yet, so it's hard for me to for sure say, yeah, this is the perfect segue. But I mean, for me personally, it's the most professional environment that I've been in as it pertains to the fans, the club, the community. It really provided us with a special experience to connect with the fans, connect with something that's bigger than yourself. A lot of times when you're playing for a club team or a college team, yeah, you're playing for your school, you're playing for your teammates, you're playing for your coaches, but there's not a huge fan base.
Right.
And for the Blues, with the fan base and the community aspect of it, it created something really special for us where we could go and go to an elementary school or go to the Annapolis Museum or do stuff like that where you're really connecting with the community. The community knows who you are as a person, and it matters for your image and for the image of the club. I think that's something that was much different than, say, playing for the local club team or something like that. So, yeah, I think it's a really good opportunity for guys.
Right. Follow-up to that, too. Let's face it, like, go to matches. Like, I went to the match in Frederick. 50 people.
Right.
Half of them were parents, right? Then 8,000. It's, you got to imagine, that's just like, what the hell?
Well, it's actually quite funny because I saw a comment on Twitter, and it was a video of us after maybe Gordy scored against Frederick, with the fans going crazy and all of us celebrating the quarter. And the guy was like, this is the craziest thing about American soccer. One week you could play in front of 75 to 8,500 fans, and the next week you're playing in front of two people and a dog. And it's like, I mean, obviously we had great support from the fan group and the Bay Boys at most of our away games, if not all of them, where it was really special for us to have that. But at the same time, you know, it's not the same as playing in front of 8,500 people.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Now, all right, we're going to kind of get into nuts and bolts here on the pitch. As supporters, we just see what happens on the field in front of us. We're not down in the trenches. You're not hearing what's being said. You're not hearing the chirping. You're not seeing the grabbing or the pulling. You just typically see, like, a great example would be the championship game. Game got real damn chippy. A lot of grabbing, a lot of pulling, multiple red cards.
Those, it was just blind.
Coaches losing their minds. Like, what is it that is, when you're on the pitch in a game like that and you just kind of know, is it kind of quick where you're just like, oh, this is going to be one of those days?
I think for me personally, like, as a nine, just my personality, I'm not the type of guy that wants to go out and talk trash and get into that stuff. I would rather be lighthearted with the center back. So I'm not getting stepped on, kicked off the ball, that type of stuff. But you definitely know with the types of guys that want to do that stuff, probably within the first 15 minutes of the game, they'll either pinch you, kick you, grab you, pull your jersey, whatever it is, hit you off the ball. I would say in the Alexandria game, actually, I got along pretty well with their center backs. I don't think that there was anything too crazy with that. The one kid was their outside back. I don't know if he ended up getting a red card or not. I think he did.
Was he like the kind of the shorter guy?
Yeah.
I think he was the one who got red.
I think he was the one that Griff got into at the end.
Yep.
I was getting into it with him a little bit, but I mean, it's not really my play style to get into it with guys, but if someone's doing it to me, I'm not just going to sit there and let him kick me and push me.
Like,
nothing to get a yellow card, but you got to stand up for yourself at some point.
Right. You gotta give him a little bit of guff back and mess with them. And, you know, maybe after you score one, you just give them the look.
Right.
The whole time you run it up the pitch, be like,
I'd rather let a goal do the talking or something like that. Like, me talking to them doesn't really do anything with I score or beat him or create a goal, whatever it is. Like, that's just going to do all the talking. So,
for me back in the day, it would be if somebody wanted to stand in front of me on a corner kick as a goalkeeper, Oh, I was definitely cupping your butt. There was a hand on your butt. Full hand on your cheek of your butt. Because that normally would freak him out. He'd immediately step away from me. Be like, there you go. Just got the space I needed. We'll be all right.
That's funny.
I would blow kisses on penalties. Like, look you right in the face.
Just, okay, yeah. Yep.
Just like right before you went to take that game. Just anything to get you out of your mindset.
That's funny.
Because, you know, it's especially in the case of a penalty. You were supposed to score.
Right.
I'm not supposed to save it.
You got to do something crazy to. Yeah.
Well, I think it was Sports Mechanics had on ESPN had done an episode about it. It's legitimately, if the keeper does everything right, guesses right, dives correctly, the shooter still has to make a mistake, like put it too close.
Right.
If the shooter hits it perfectly, keeper cannot get to it. Absolutely cannot get to it. So, that's the. There's a lot that goes into the match then. That's kind of where I was getting to with all this that I think people don't necessarily know, and we get kind of riled up and we're yelling and we're screaming because we're trying to, you know, cheer you on, get you over the finish line, get you to where you need to be. And it's like, don't necessarily know all the little things that are being said on the pitch to one another, all the grabbing, all the jockeying, all the, like, you just, it's a very interesting dichotomy, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I think the one thing that was harder than I expected was communicating with our own teammates. It was hard to hear each other, and it was kind of surprising to me. The first game when we had, what was it, 4,000 or so, a little bit over that for the Community Shield game, it was really hard to adapt, like talking and stuff. Like my voice was just completely shot after that game. So I think that was actually the biggest difference than like a club game or a college game, was just like, it was so hard to hear.
The only thing I could ever hear in a match was Griff yelling at you to get into the wall. Every single time there was a free kick. It's the only thing I could hear every single time consistently was him screaming at you to be in the wall.
That's funny. I remember actually one of the first games Coach Colin called me over because he couldn't get Elton's attention. He was like, we were defending the half where you guys would sit. And Coach, obviously our bench was on the other side, and Coach Colin was yelling at Elton, like trying to give him instructions, and it got to the point where he had to like call me over to give him to me, and then I tried to give him to Elton, and I couldn't give him to Elton, and like it was like passing it down, like playing like telephone throughout the team. Hopefully the right message got to him,
which means the completely wrong message got to him.
Well, hopefully it did, because I think that Community Shield, we got the clean sheet, so it eventually worked out.
3-0.
Now kind of transitioning outside off the pitch, really, it's really like the community aspect. Like, we kind of take pride in that, especially with this club, how like our GM Fred Mathis always mentions like community opportunity is something that we pretty much pride this club on. Like, how would you say you want to be remembered within this community?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough one, because obviously soccer is going to be a huge piece of it, always, because that's what I'm known for. People wouldn't know who I am without soccer. So soccer really is catalyzes all that for me. But then with soccer, I think it's a huge opportunity, whether I'm a coach or a player, to create the next generation of players who want to be good people, but also be good soccer players. I think it's super important to me to handle myself with humility. It's something that we talk about at Georgetown all the time, just being a good person. And our coaches at Georgetown are just the best people ever. And so they've treated us that way. And it's our mission to treat the community that way and treat it with care. So I mean, as much as I can after the games, I always want to be the last guy signing autographs if I can, the guy who's always talking to the fans or always has time for an extra picture or something of that sort. So I want to be someone who's available and someone who's there for the community when needed. So
I would definitely say, like, every time, like, you always know me, I'm always handing out the Sharpies, myself and the other interns as well, like, handing out the Sharpies, making sure the guys are there. And there's always, like, that
you
one
You never
last.
Signed a body part. You were supposed to sign somebody's leg.
That's because an adult never came up to me and they never said, I want my hot dog.
Yeah. They would have got a hot dog, a beer, and a scarf if you would have signed a body part.
That's their fault. They didn't listen.
Yeah. I signed a few foreheads, legs, arms, forearms, hands, phone cases, I mean, you name it.
We signed popcorn boxes.
Popcorn boxes, a cast, a croc.
Crocs were the crazy one to me. I was like, these are some nice shoes. I'm like, do you really want me to sign it? And the kid's like, yeah. I'm like, Mom, is it okay that I sign this? And they're like, I guess so.
Like literally one of the parents came up, like, I think I was in the middle of signing one, because, like, I guess the kids, like, everyone wants, like, to get something signed by somebody.
Right.
But, like, the kid was like, just sign my other one. Like, my dad will wash it. And then the dad's like, I'm not going to wash that. Like, just make sure you get the other shoe because it's already dirty or something like that.
Love it. We kind of touched base on this a little bit, but let's go ahead and get into it more. Most of your career, like, even with college, a few hundred people, right? Like, what was it like to, like, damn near close to 9,000 for the conference final? It was, what, 8,800 for that match? Like
84 or something like that.
Yeah, just insanity. Yeah. What is it like to play in front of those kind of numbers?
It's really crazy. It's hard to, it kind of leaves me speechless right now just trying to explain it and put into words, like, what it means and how difficult it is at times. Like, I think the Community Shield game was a huge step up for me. I was so nervous, like, stepping out, and it really shaped me as a player and a person to be able to perform with confidence in front of so many people. I think it even though it kind of sounds crazy, it made me more confident as a person when I would go out into public, just being like, okay, like, I can do this, like, be confident in myself in front of all those people. And by the end of it, I think it was something that I thrived off of. You guys, I watched the podcast, and you guys talked about it a little bit after the game. Was like, you guys said how I thrive off the energy of the crowd and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think by the end of it, I did. I don't think that was the case in the beginning. I think it was something that was really hard for me in the beginning. Mm-hmm. But it's obviously something that, like, it gets you so amped up to play, and you're so ready to play that sometimes you are over, like, you need to calm down, you just need to take a chill pill, like, settle yourself, get a touch, like, that type of stuff.
Follow up to that, and if you're not comfortable having any locker room discussion to get it, what was it like with the rest of the guys? Like, were they all just kind of like, what the hell?
I mean, it's crazy for us because we're all, like, D1 and D3 players, and it's just like, obviously Elton has played in mm-hmm. the first division in Brazil and stuff, so Elton's a little bit different of an experience because he's played in front of 20,000, and
right, of course.
So he and him as kind of like the father of the team, like, mm-hmm. obviously he's a lot older than all of us, and he's able to handle all of us as being the captain, that type of stuff. It was really good for him to have that experience because it calmed all of us down a little bit. But mm-hmm. at the same time, you're looking around and we're like walking out, we're like, holy cow, like, what are we about to get ourselves into?
Yeah. do you think that dealing with that this summer kind of, I mean, the first time you set foot on the pitch at Audi Field is going to be an experience. It's what you've worked for.
Right.
It's your professional career.
Right.
And there's going to be butterflies and there's going to be that kind of stuff. But you know what? You've seen a lot of people before.
Yeah.
That's only $6,000 more.
No,
you'll be
absolutely.
All right.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I think you just touched on it a little bit, but, like, it's obviously going to be nerve wracking to start because it's professional. It's a step higher. It's going to be my first time playing in a professional game. So I think mm-hmm. like I'll get used to it eventually, but the first time stepping one is definitely going to be a little nerve wracking, as you would expect as a young guy, that type of stuff. But I think Annapolis has definitely prepared me for it. I mean, you know, playing in front of 8,500, it's something that you have to get used to for sure. Obviously my confidence level when I stepped on it originally, for the Community Shield compared to the final is a lot different. So I think that it definitely has prepared me, and obviously it's going to be a step higher, so I'm going to be nervous. But I think that, yeah, Annapolis has put me in a really good spot.
Excellent.
Especially with, like you mentioned, how the Community Shield started off, like, we had like 4,000. I'll say, even as a employee of the Blues, I didn't even expect more than 2,000 was going to show up, because I'm thinking it's a Wednesday night, it's our first game, it's a community game, no one's going to show up, but it's still going to be like a low number. Even Navy staff underestimated how many people we had. They thought we were going to have, like, maybe
ran out of food, ran, like,
in the first, like, 30 minutes.
Yeah, ran out of everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
Well, as players, we're in the locker room, and I will share a bit of the locker room piece, because I don't think it's too private, but it's like, we're all talking, we're like, oh, like, how many fans do we think we're going to have and stuff. We're like, I was like, I think we'll have like anywhere from like 500 to 1,000. And then Steven comes in and he's like, all right, like, we've already sold like 3,500 tickets. And we're like, what? Like,
like, holy crap.
Yeah, we're like, oh my gosh, like, this is gonna be crazy. Like,
oh yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy experience. Yeah.
And then leading on from that to eventually, like, the final home game that we had, the conference championship, where we pretty much highlighted throughout the whole show so far already, it's been very chippy. Like, Alexandria, it's pretty known now, they're our main rivals at this point. So right. It's already chippy. That physical intensity is there. Yellow cards are thrown. Red cards are thrown. People are getting ejected.
alleged spit is being there.
But it's raining.
Yeah, it was like literally probably the most intense work day I've ever had in my life. Oh, God. But
I just had heart surgery the day before. Yeah, yeah.
And you still made it out of steps.
At that game. Yeah, I don't know how you came to that
game. She was sitting next to me and just had her hand on me the whole time going, stay calm, stay calm.
You don't understand how upset but still happy I was to see you going on the field, coming down all those steps.
At the end of the match, I was like, yeah, I told her, I was like, bleep it. Going down. I'm going down there.
And the reason that happened is because of what happened towards like the 96th to 97th minute. Of course, it's literally the final seconds, and we have, I think it was Miles Lamb who throws the ball in, chips out, and then you're literally right there in the perfect spot to get the perfect shot in. Like, how would you say that moment meant for not just the Blues players, but also just the entire community of, like, I was now called the Blues Nation?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I mean, if you had that game, you probably know that, I mean, that game had everything. I mean, all my best friends from high school were at the game, and they hate soccer, and they were like, that was like the best thing ever. Like,
oh,
they,
that's fantastic.
They are like hooked on soccer now because of it. But no, I mean, it was just a kind of a climax, like culmination of everything we'd worked for as a club, as a community. It wasn't like, I know that Brendan Hartlove, the announcer, always talks about, like, or he had that great piece of announcing where he was like, moment of magic, Jacob Merle moment of magic. And you know, I don't think it was my moment of magic as much as it was just like the full club's moment of magic. Like, it was just everything that everyone had worked for had just kind of culminated into that one moment where, yeah, I was the one who scored the goal, but like that moment was huge. And then obviously be going to win the penalty shootout. So, I mean, you guys talked a little bit about it on the podcast after the game, but I shouldn't have been in that spot probably. As a forward, I probably should have been in the six or in the PK area, like looking for a, like, flick on for a tap in. And for some reason, I don't know, I just floated to the back of the box. Just wasn't thinking, just kind of instinctual. Ball flies out and just instincts. Just now that I watched the game back, I've probably watched the game back probably 5 to 10 times. I mean, it's like the best game of my life. Like, I mean, it was just such a crazy game, crazy moment. I like realize now, like, if that didn't go in, that was probably the last kick of the game. They could have just seen off the game.
Yeah, that would have been goal kick. Yeah. Goal kick, boom, whistle, done. Game's over.
Like, I wasn't thinking of that in the moment, but I mean, just so happy to like see the ball fly in. And at that point, I mean, I celebrate. I like put my arms out to the side, just like wishing I could like embrace literally every Blues fan in the crowd. Like, just like such a special moment for the club. And you know, I was so happy to be a part of it.
Follow up, you kind of answered it a little, but like in that moment, sometimes, you know, the ball looks like it's 10 feet wide when it's coming to you, right? Like, you could just see it all goes into slow motion. Did it, or was it just instinct, boom, hit it, oh shit, that went in?
I mean, it was like the ball flies out, I'm running backwards, I'm like, oh, ball's flying in the air, like, why don't I just have it, like, why not? And I like catch it clean, I'm like, oh, I caught that clean. And I look up and it like flies in the corner, and I was like, I don't know, I didn't know how to celebrate. I mean, it's one of those moments where you're so overjoyed you like just don't know what to do. Obviously, like, you can't just like rip your shirt off because we didn't win the game yet.
right.
But like, you just like don't know how to handle yourself. And I ended up sliding into the corner, and like, I didn't know what to do with myself. I mean, we were just going crazy. I mean,
I just figure you just feel a wave of, you know, 10 bodies laying on top of you.
Well, I mean, I'll say this. I love Coach Colin. I haven't known him for that long. Like, I met him this summer, and we created a really good relationship over the summer, and we still talk a good bit. He gives me a lot of feedback on my play and stuff throughout the college season. But it was the first time I had ever seen him lose his cool. Like, I mean, he was in the corner celebrating with us. Like, he sprinted to the corner. Coach Dan sprinted to the corner. Like, first time I ever seen him just like show a ton of emotion with celebrating. So.
Well, and even in that moment, like you said, job wasn't done.
Right.
There was still a penalty shootout, and it could all go to crap.
Well, not even just a penalty shootout, but we still had extra time leading up to the shootout.
Right. Yeah,
I think we were pretty confident going into extra time. You know, like, we were even men. Like, I think that them getting a red card changed the momentum. You could just feel it, like, in the crowd. I remember I was with Matthias to Jesus, and I remember saying to him, like, we're going to win this game. Like, we're going to win this game. We're just going back and forth. Everyone, all of the players are around to each other. We're just like, we're going to win this game. We're going to find a way. And that type of belief, I mean, there was never – it never crossed really our minds, I don't think, as players. Like, oh, like, we're losing, and it's the 96th minute. Like, we have to score. It was just like, we're going to find a way to win the game. We're going to find a way.
Outsider's perspective, but you see this happen all the time in those kind of matches, be it at the highest stage like the World Cup or any kind of knockout tournament. Typically, the teams are gassed by that point, and you get to those two extra time frames, and no one's trying to push the narrative.
Yeah,
they're just making sure they don't screw up.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Don't make the mistake that costs you the game. So both teams tend to take the foot off the gas a little, and unless there's this brilliant opportunity to get something done, you just kind of go, "We'll take our chances on penalties. We'll get there. Just get through this. Don't screw up."
Yeah, I know. I think for us, like, I think that the extra time actually didn't go how we would have liked it to. Like you said, it was a little bit boring. Obviously,
really? Alexandria, I think, got a fast break on one too. Yeah, there was a miss hit that they got on, and Griff came through with.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the thing that Coach Colin always talks about and says, like, we're playing to entertain. We're not playing to. I mean, we're playing to win, obviously, but we're playing to, like, entertaining football. Like, we're trying to have the fans enjoy the games, that type of stuff. So, like, us, we kind of failed in that extra time period where, like, we made it boring game. It was just kind of like everyone's sitting back, doesn't want to, like, mess up or anything like that.
All the subs have been used. You guys were gassed. They were gassed. You're each down a man. You could just tell.
That's the thing, actually, is I think we had an advantage where it was like, I think that they were, like, extremely gassed. Like, I don't think we were that tired. I think maybe some of the guys were really tired. But, like, for me personally, like, I don't remember being, like, super tired in that moment. Especially because, like, you have the rain on you. It wasn't, like, a super hot night for being the summer and stuff.
True.
So, like, for them, I think that they were gassed. And we could, I mean, because we play possession. So they had to press us the whole game. They're running around without the ball, that type of stuff.
Yep.
But I think they were, we could have taken more advantage of them.
Obviously, the penalty shootout.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Griff doesn't get enough attention. I know that you're a goalie, so you're going to love that I say this.
I always showed love to my keeper.
Yeah,
shout out,
no,
Griff.
I mean, Griff makes two saves and really wins us the PK shootout, wins us the game. And I think that there needs to be a bit more attention towards that, is that he won us the game. He won us the shootout. So.
Yeah, I think, you know, I just jumping inside your own head, I figure you guys as shooters are just like, get us one. Get us one.
Yeah.
We'll do our job. Yeah. Just get us one.
Yeah, we took penalties. We took penalties that week at some point in training, and it was actually very few saves in the shootouts. I mean, there were some saves, but I was pretty confident with all our shooters. And then obviously when you have 6'5" Griff standing in net, it's pretty imposing. Yep. And I think we were really confident in the shootout. I mean, you when you have a goalie like that, and then you had the players that we had on our team taking the shots, I think we were all pretty confident that we would get it done. And obviously, Griff comes up with a huge save, and then it kind of just falls into place for me to put it in. I didn't honestly hit a great penalty. I just sent the goalie the wrong way. So it all worked out in the end, but really, Griff won the game for us. So.
You did better than Onana for Everton against Fulham. Did much as an Evertonian. That one kind of broke my heart. I was like, all you had to do was just put it in a damn net. Saved one, and you really got it wrong.
And transitioning back to highlighting the community again, and you kind of mentioned this a bit when we were talking about that. What would your advice be to, like, any young local footballer, whether it may be, like, a youth level team or someone who may be joining, like, the next ranks of becoming the next Blues player or a U23 level player?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's probably pretty cliche. And if you're going to ask a list of players this, they would probably tell similar stuff. But just if you're not the best player right now, just don't give up on it. If you really love the game and you're willing to work harder than the other guys, it's gonna work out for you. For me personally, like, I wasn't always the best player growing up. I think my high school year, my freshman year, I was a center back, center mid until my sophomore year of high school. I had a coach, he's the Johns Hopkins coach, Craig Appleby. It's a guy I really trust and a guy I really learned under. You know, he was pretty honest with me about where I was. I wanted to go to all these big schools. I wanted to go to Georgetown. I wanted to go to Maryland, UNC, Wake Forest, Clemson, all these big programs. And he was pretty honest with me. He's like, look, like, as a center back, you're not good enough to go to these schools. You should look at some, you're good enough to go D1, but not maybe to these top schools, like compete for a national championship, that type of stuff. And I mean, that was real for me and something I valued a lot. And then, so it kind of changed over where he transitioned me to a forward, and he was honest with me then too. He's like, look, like, I think you're good enough. I'm going to advocate for you for these schools, that type of stuff. So just really anything can happen. Like, whether it's a position change or you just work on yourself and get better, anything can happen. I mean, I think my transition then after that from Celtic to Pipeline, that year with Coach Craig was with Celtic, and then I transitioned to Pipeline after that. Mm-hmm. I had a call with my coach for the majority of my career, in probably 6 or 7 years, Gaetan Caltabiano. He called me and he was like, look, like, you're gonna come in and you're not gonna be a 80 minute player like you are with Celtic. Like, you're not gonna be the guy. We have good strikers already. Like, you're not gonna be the same type of player, same role that you are for that. We're gonna try and play you as an outside back, that type of stuff. And I took that really personally, to be honest. And the first training session, we played like a little scrimmage, and my team won 4-0, and I scored 4 goals. And I mean, it was, but that was the thing for them. It was just like always pushing me to get better. So if I had advice to young guys, it would just be never stop working, whether you're really satisfied with yourself or whether you're really down below. Like, if you're down low, there's only up. And if you're on top, there's guys down low that are chasing you. I think another story for younger guys is, like, after I committed to Georgetown, you know, I was on top of the world. I thought that I was the best player ever because I committed really early for my year, to one the team that had just won the national championship. So for the next like 2 months or so, I like stopped, like, I was on the highest mountain possible and stopped putting in as much work as I probably should have. And it like really showed in my game. Like, I was not dominating in training. I wasn't at the level I wanted to be. I wasn't scoring as many goals as I wanted to. So I would say for guys who are doing really well and having a lot of success, don't become complacent with it. And then for guys who are down low, like, chase the guys, because there might be guys who are complacent. Like, you never know. Like, it's just take it day by day with working every day, be consistent, be disciplined with it. I think consistency is the biggest thing. You don't want to go out and run 15 miles and think you're doing crazy and then not run for the rest of the week. You want to run 1 mile a day until you build that stamina, like, that type of thing. So I would just say, yeah, just keep your head down, work hard, whether you're at the top or you're at the bottom.
Something else you kind of hinted at there that was interesting, played all over the damn pitch.
Yeah.
You know, so for a younger player, don't pigeonhole yourself.
Right.
If a coach says, hey, I fancy you here, hear him out. Give it a try.
Right.
It might work. It may be the right move for you.
Yeah.
So don't think, you know, oh, this is what I do, and this is it. Play within your system. Listen to your coach. They are looking out for your best interest. They're not trying to do you dirty.
Right.
Learn different positions, and it will help you, I'm sure, from being a center back, probably makes you a smarter striker.
Definitely. I mean, I think that the thing I struggled with as a center back was like my positioning a lot, but at the same time, I knew what was hard to defend against, what type of movements, what type of dribbling, that type of stuff. So I try to put that into my game a little bit. I mean, another story with what you're talking about, a guy I played with in high school, Andrew Privet. He plays at Charlotte FC now in the MLS. He was a 10 playmaker, transitioned to a 6 in college at Penn State, and he goes to Charlotte in preseason, gets offered a contract. And about halfway through the year, he just starts starting at center back. They played him as a center back, and he's now starting at center back at Charlotte. It's like, okay, well, you were a 10, now you're a center back, and it's like, well, you're playing in the MLS. So.
Yeah, he went from a 10 to a holding midfielder to the defensive midfielder, so, now you're a center back.
I would say just, be open, and like in training and stuff, just be a winner as much as possible. Whether that means, obviously, you don't want to kick your teammates, hurt your teammates, but just be the guy that just always wants to win no matter what, whether it's like a little rondo or if it's a scrimmage at the end of training, whatever it is, just be a winner, whether you're playing the position you want or not. Like, if you have a winning mindset, it'll turn out right.
So now what? You've been drafted. I mean, obviously, you are still a college student.
Right.
Like, how does the rest of this year go for you? What is your world?
Yeah, I mean, so it's a weird transition now. So I went back and forth with the Georgetown coaches and with DC trying to figure out what I was going to do, whether I was going to return to Georgetown or whether I was going to go back, go to DC. And they came to the conclusion I was going to sign for DC and forgo Georgetown for another year. And so where that leaves me now is trying to get an online Georgetown degree, or maybe taking classes on campus at Georgetown, just trying to navigate what I'm going to do while being in DC, because the DC facility is actually not in DC. It's in Leesburg, which is about 45 minutes outside of DC. So it'll be pretty difficult if I'm taking classes on campus to navigate everything.
I was going
to
say Route 66 and Route 7, really easy roads to travel. Like the easiest. Never any traffic on those roads. It's painless. Not at all.
No, that's funny. So I ended up, I signed for DC, and I'm in a spot now where I'm going to be heading to preseason with them. You know, we will go to DC the 15th until the 22nd, and then we actually go out to Saudi Arabia after that. Yeah.
Fun. So
preseason in Saudi Arabia for about 17 days, I think. And then we'll come back and we have a season opener on the 24th versus the Revs. And so, yeah, that's where I'm at now. Yeah.
Awesome. Very cool. Yeah. Very, very cool. Well, thank you very much for making the time. I'm glad we were able to make all the stars align and get this all done. Is there anything you wish to share or promote for the Blues community?
No, I mean, I would just say keep spreading the word about the club. It's a special team. It's a special organization led by the players, the people, the fans. You guys are the most important piece of it. You like really this is nothing without the fans, to be honest. And you hear it a lot in football, but I don't think the team would have the same player pool. It wouldn't have the same pool for anything if there wasn't fans. And so, I mean, I think the fans, you guys make everything for us. So, yeah, keep coming to the games, keep supporting. I'll be right in DC. So I'll be at a fair share of games this summer when I can make it. So
excellent. Love it. Be sure to find me in the parking lot. You know where I'll be before the games. You know where I'll be and you'll know what I'll be doing. All right. So that's going to wrap it up, boys and girls. Hiram, any parting words?
Yeah, I know this might seem like a bit early or whatever, but I just got to say, Jacob and the rest of the crew are part of the Annapolis Blues. You guys are living legends of this club for sure. Like, even though we only had 1 year, just that 1 year alone, 10-1-1, or I'm sorry, no, 8-1-1, and then making it to become regular season champions, Mid-Atlantic Conference champions in the playoffs, and then make it to the regional semifinals in our first year. Like, that's unheard of, especially doing it in front of like record-breaking crowds too. Like, I really consider you guys legends for this club, because you guys not only, like you mentioned, the fans helped elevate it, but you guys also brought it to that level where people are starting to hear about Annapolis. Like, we have people in Texas, Florida, New Jersey, people in Scotland hearing about the Blues. Like, this is like just incredible. So
we got our your personal fan Taylor in Kansas is following the Annapolis Blues.
No, I mean, I think what I have to say about that is, look, I think that it's actually the exact opposite. I think that you guys are the legends of the club. You know, you look at like the front office, you look at someone like yourself, Steven, Kyle, like people like this who are putting in all this work for us and making this really possible for us is what makes us be able to play the way we play and makes us be able to perform. So you look at, you know, the front office, the owners, everything, every part of this club is, I think when you look at the top, you look at the owners, it trickles down into the front office, it trickles down into general manager, it trickles down into the coaches, and then it trickles down into the players and the fans. So you look at, I mean, really the whole organization. I think that it's not just the players as legends. I think it's the club has become legendary because of the way we operate things and that type of stuff. So, I mean, I think it's just such a special place to be for guys who want to play for the Blues. I think it's definitely something you should look at, but also for the community, it's definitely something that if you haven't been to a game yet or you're debating whether to buy season tickets again, do it. Like, it's such a special thing to be a part of.
You heard the man. Buy tickets. We're already at 4,300 over. Bring it up to 5,000. I would want 5,000 season ticket holders by the time season starts. So, get there.
Yeah, let's break the record next year. Yeah.
And
yeah.
One last thought, just a elder statesman to the young Patwan. If we're pronouncing your damn name wrong, flip and tell us. Be on the lookout, everybody, for more pods this winter as we lead up to the next season of Blues Footy. Until the next time.
Up the Blues!